But we're doing things that you probably wouldn't see in any other Chicago cracker-thin pizzeria, like par-baking our crust for 90 seconds. That gives the interior slices the same integrity and sturdiness as the exterior slices.
From suburban Chicago pizza nerd to a high-profile rooftop in the heart of the bustling West Loop, Tony Scardino has been an apprentice for many years, working for some high-profile restaurants and learning from even bigger names in the pizza world. Now he's got a gig in Chicago's hottest neighborhood, making at least three styles of pizza from a relatively tiny kitchen. The story behind Professor Pizza, straight ahead.
Straight fried pepperoni.
I need a deep dish pepperoni and a thin sausage to go.
Can I get two cheesivores and one Detroit?
Can I get one large pep, one large sausage, and one large pep special?
This is Pizza City, the podcast dedicated to the art, craft, and passion behind the world's greatest pizzas. I'm Steve Dolinsky, author of Pizza City USA, the ultimate Chicago pizza guide, and founder of Pizza City Tours and Pizza City Fest.
Nice. It's crispy.
And welcome, pizza fans. Great to have you along with us for another edition of Pizza City. Quick reminder, tickets on sale now for Pizza City Fest Chicago, August 26th and 27th at Salt Shed. Brand new music venue here on the Chicago River, just north of downtown. 40 pizza makers from all over Chicagoland, featuring 10 different styles of pie. World-class seminars featuring Ratza's Dan Richer, a Pizza Shoals' Brian Spangler, and Pizza Lola's Ann Kim. Unlimited drinks, salad, sides, and desserts. And new this year, live entertainment and music as well. Got some bands to announce pretty soon. Lots of surprises in store. More info at pizzacityfest.com. And speaking of Pizza Fest, for those of you who follow me on Pizza City USA on Instagram, I was just in Nashville this week, scoping out the region for a possible fest there late next year. And I have to say, I went in very skeptical. A lot of hot chicken in Nashville, obviously. Probably too many wood-fired neo-Neapolitans in town. But there were also respectable New York slices and Sicilian squares, even a remarkable Chicago-style deep dish, and a couple of tavern pies, one in Clarksville, about 35 miles away. I tried 27 places in 5 days. I got the receipts to prove it and the heartburn. The guys from Frankie's in Brooklyn were literally opening their doors on Wednesday night this week. So I think the plan is to go back in late September, hit the remaining places in town. I missed a few. And then include a few from the region like Cincinnati, Louisville, Huntsville, Birmingham, Alabama. Maybe even MTH in Smyrna, which I loved. They were on the podcast last year. They're just outside Atlanta. And we make it a Southeast regional event. So I'm going to have more on this later, but pencil that one in for late 2024. All right, on to this week's show. Tony Scardino has been a gypsy pizza maker for the past couple of years. I first met him at Dough Bros in River North here in Chicago, where he was doing some consulting. Then he was using a kitchen just a block or two north of Wrigley Field, where he was making Chicago's only true grandma-style pie. Then it was a ghost kitchen in Humboldt Park, a pop-up in a speakeasy behind a barbershop. You get the idea. Today, Scardino, who goes by the moniker Professor Pizza, is running a pretty tight ship inside a rooftop space in the West Loop. That's where he makes three types of pizza, and he seems to be constantly experimenting with other styles, as he was on the day that I stopped by to talk to him. He certainly credits a lot of mentors who have helped him along the way. And while he uses the professor title freely, he really comes across as more humble than professorial, due in part to his relatively recent foray into pizza making. But he has reason to be proud, I say. His pizzas just seem to get better with experience, and he is quick to point out flaws if and when he's made a mistake, rather than blame someone else or a faulty oven. And so I began our discussion, as I always do, by asking our guest about their first pizza memory.
Yeah, I grew up in the northwest suburbs, not far from Mundelein, so we'd gather up the family and go to Bill's Pub, and I'd get a kick out of throwing the peanut shells on the ground and having square-cut slices. I remember from an early age that I'd only eat the exterior slices because I swore that I needed a handle.
So
kind of a combination of the ground round with the peanuts and the pizzeria in the northwest suburbs. And didn't Bill's do another style, like a double decker style, if I remember?
Yeah, like a kind of like a double dough with like a lattice crust sort of thing. My dad always loved that because he's of that generation that decides quality based on the weight of something. And for me, it was always about the cracker thin. I also have fond memories of, you know, going to Bulls games and hitting up Pompeii either before or after the game, and really that being my first like square slice, almost Sicilian bakery-esque pizza experience. So that was also pretty revelatory to me too. And then later came D'Amato's and other examples of that. But Pompeii was really early on as well.
Yeah, Pompeii on Taylor Street, the original Little Italy in Chicago. Okay, so how did you get into this business? Did you know at an early age? Were you eating a lot of pizza? Were you cooking as a teenager? What was the path for you?
Yeah, so at an early age, I was already exposed to food. I come from an Italian-American family that had all sorts of different operations over the years, be it catering or restaurants or corner stores or pizzerias. As I was growing up, my father had already mostly transitioned out of that industry into real estate, but I still had my uncle based in Twin Lakes, Wisconsin and Lake Geneva. And in the summers, he would run the American Legion hot dog stand right above the steps of the beach. And, you know, I could barely see over the counter, but I would fill sodas and hand out hot dogs and really just mostly get in the way. But I was happy to be there. I was first cooking at a variety of different restaurants in the city, doing more fine dining, or as I call it, like refined dining type cuisine, you know, the public and quality meats and au chevals and table donkey and sticks of the world. But
those are good names.
Yeah, I got a little bit burnt out and wanted to revert back to the food that I grew up with. And not that we were necessarily always making pizza in the household, but it seemed like a particular expression of Italian American cuisine that I could really, you know, get excited about.
And Chicago, I mean, as much as we both love this city and its pizza scene, wasn't really all that fascinating until several years ago. It was pretty much deep stuffed tavern and maybe one other style. But as you've kind of come up in the business now, you've seen this explosion too.
I couldn't agree more. When I first started really diving into this, and like in my generation, it was kind of at the beginning of those early YouTube years and being able to see a world outside of really just your own backyard by typing in like a Tony Gemignani or a Anthony Mangieri or what have you. And so for me, in those years, it seemed like all the best pizza was not in Chicago. It was in other parts of the world. And now, due to places like Bonci and Spaccanopoli and Fornaroso and Pizza Friendly Pizza, this has become a destination for pizza unlike any other.
Got a pop-up at a bar in West Fulton. You were at the Ghost Kitchen in Humboldt Park. Now we're on a rooftop in the West Loop here with this beautiful deck, by the way, which you talk about, where you've got a much larger kitchen and you're making three styles of pizza. So tell me about that evolution a little bit.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's had more of an incremental career than me. Slow but steady hopefully wins the race. But yeah, I mean, up until the past 2 years, I never had any outside money attached to myself. You know, I'm only 32 years old. I don't have a nest egg of hundreds of thousands of dollars of my own money behind any of these projects. So I started super, super humble. I started, you know, working in other pizzerias and making the most of my talent or passion in other people's pizzerias. And then sometime around the beginning of the pandemic, I made the transition from operating or managing Dobros to giving it a go at my own. I had an opportunity to get into a food hall, but in that moment, food halls and restaurants in general seem more unsure than ever. So I started with the idea to make pizza in my garden apartment at the time. And because I started off humble, I was like, you know what? I don't even think I have enough money for pizza ingredients. So let's start off with making focaccia. And so I started off with making focaccia, and, you know, a weekend or two went by, transitioned into pizza, started selling 16 pizzas and 25, then 35, then 85, and then moving out of the apartment. And it's been a gradual increase and production and exposure from there on out. And now we're on a beautiful rooftop here in the West Loop. So it's definitely been a journey. And, you know, I would still like to say there's a whole lot left in that journey.
You're doing Grandma Pier, you're doing New York style, you're doing the Cracker Thin. I think you're the kind of guy, you said you're just messing with some New Haven style. You like to mess with different things. So is that going to always be your thing, or are you going to ever focus on one thing?
I think it's always going to be part of my story and part of my brand. I have considered having places that maybe focus in on one or two styles, or, you know, regional Italian terroir and cuisine. And so maybe it lends more Romana and Neapolitana and stuff like that, or strictly Neapolitana. So I've thought of stuff like that, and those projects may come in the future. But right now, you know, it's fun to expose Chicagoans to all these different varieties and styles of pizza and say, hey, we don't necessarily make the best of any of those styles. We pay homage to the places and the people that originated them, but we certainly put our own spin on them. And, you know, I have fun doing that, and I imagine I'll have fun doing that for a long time to come. And I want to put my own mark on an inherently Chicago style of pizza. And we always talk about how deep dish is fantastic, and we probably have better deep dish options today in Chicago than we've ever really had, believe it or not. And yet we still, as a city, eat far more Cracker Thin than we ever will deep dish. And so...
Don't tell Mark Malnati that, but yes, continue.
No, and he makes a great one. And certainly that was also part of my, you know, childhood. It was a big deal to get a Lou Malnati's pie and, you know, kind of undress it with the foil and the plastic that is only produced for a Lou Malnati's pie. And,
no, I know, but I know. I agree with you that the ubiquitous style in Chicago is the Cracker Thin. So you, as you were saying.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And so, I mean...
But what are you doing differently? You're embedding cornmeal, of course, cornmeal in your dough.
We're doing a variety of things differently, and I really have to pay all that respect to Tony Gemignani. I would say, if you've ever had Capo's Pizza in San Francisco, it's one of the most fantastic iterations of Chicago pizza at large. And now he's doing Detroit style and a variety of different things out of there. It started with Chicago style, and the basis of what I'm doing with my Cracker Thin is based off of his. So what does that mean? Yeah, things like sweetened condensed milk in the crust, things like cornmeal in the crust that are usually really only reserved for the extending or opening of the dough. We're doing classic things like using a cold rolled cheater. But we're doing things that you probably wouldn't see in any other Chicago Cracker Thin pizzeria, like par baking our crust for 90 seconds. And we find that gives the interior slices the same integrity and sturdiness as the exterior slices, which can at times be the downfall of a Chicago Cracker Thin pizza.
And in the New York style, are you just pressing your nose against the window at fill in the blank, Scars, Lindustry, or Tony's to get ideas for New York style?
Yeah, all of those places are definitely, you know, in some cases friends, but all inspiration. And, you know, I was out in New York last October and became reinvigorated for the style after going to places like Lindustry and Mama's Two, and even a newcomer, Feeney, was incredible. People don't know us for being a slice shop here on a rooftop in the West Loop, and we'll never be a proper slice shop, but I'm really proud of the slices that we're selling here.
And then you have the Grandma, which I think is probably the toughest sell in Chicago because it's just not seen anywhere. Nobody does a Grandma style.
Not a lot of education around it, but really, thanks to guys like you, people know that I do it now. And you gave me a lot of credit early on for bringing this style to Chicago. And I don't know if that's me and me alone, but certainly I was one of the first to do it. And I sell a lot of them, man. I tell people this is a close cousin to Sicilian, but all the things you might love about Sicilian are kind of amplified in the Grandma. It's a little bit thinner, it's a little bit crispier, but it still has somewhat of a pillowy interior. Not as pillowy as a Sicilian, but what it lacks in that, it makes up in crispiness, right? Sicilians normally are a 12 by 18 affair. This is a 12 by 12 affair cut into four slices, allowing each slice to be a corner slice, which if you're a pan pizza person, you know is the coveted slice to have. So we're really excited about it. We put the sauce on top and treat it almost as a topping within itself. So it's a style of pizza that's really special and really near and dear to my heart.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to keep talking with Tony Scardino here, Professor Pizza, on the rooftop here in the West Loop. He's going to make a pie for us, although it's not going to be one of those three we just described. It's something he's currently working on. Then we're going to also to have a quick preview of our next show coming up in 2 weeks, so stay with us. And welcome back. We're here at Professor Pizza's joint with Tony Scardino. And Tony, where exactly are we? We're in the West Loop on a rooftop, but it's called what?
Yeah, so the rooftop is called Teto, which is a concept by Atomic Hospitality Group, the people that brought you Recess and Untitled, right? We're actually right down the street from Recess at 406 North Sangamon, and we're here on the rooftop. So we're offering al fresco dining from now till sometime in October when the weather inevitably turns on us here in Chicago. But we're making the most of that time, and this has been the first opportunity for me to take pizzas fresh out of the oven right onto people's plates and have people experience the pizza as I've been experiencing the pizza, my pizza, all these years now, as well as kind of build out the menu a little there with meatballs and different apps that we haven't had a chance to play with previous to this. Right now, I'm working on something that's not on the menu right now, but something I've been intensely interested in recently, which is New Haven-style pizza. This pie is going to have a variety of different things on it, but it's going to be anchored by potatoes, lemons, and pancetta.
Okay, now, coal-fired is usually what I think of as New Haven. I mean, modern, Sally's, Frank Pepe. But you don't have a coal fire.
I don't, but you know what? You're seeing a lot of this style with coal fire, also forced heat ovens where they're blowing a industrial size blowtorch into the oven for hours at a time, and then when it's time to actually start firing pizzas, they turn it off and they cook at residual heat for the entirety of the service. So what they all really have in common is they're all achieving really high temps and really crispy pizzas, right? So I'm not going as high as maybe some of those places do, but I've got a deck right now in my electric pizza master set to 600. And so we're gonna get some pretty blistered edges. You know, I would say admittedly with my New York style, I probably leave a larger cornicione than most do in New York, but we're really proud of our fermentation and what our crust is capable of. But here I'm as true to the style as possible, and I'm banging down those edges super flat, going for a thin, crispy, hearth-baked pie here.
Okay, flour that you're using here. I saw Tony Gemignani's name on the couple bags.
Totally, and we're using him for everything except for the Chicago Cracker Thin. We went classic with that with Sarasota, but this is also Tony's flour that he does with Central Milling.
And this is a 00, or is it what?
It is, yep.
Okay. All right, so a little hand stretch. How is this all natural starter also, you said?
Yep. Okay. Poolage, so 1-to-1 flour to flour ratio that we feed daily here.
Okay, and how long was this resting in the cooler?
This particular dough, probably 48 hours, but we can get into this dough as soon as 24. We love it at 48, though.
Okay, did a nice little hand stretch here that took him about 6 seconds. And he's working in a bunch of, is it semolina?
It is. Semola, so it's a little finer mill to it than semolina, but still that same wheat durum product.
I see lots of air pockets on this dough, which is great to see,
yeah,
a lot of activity.
Totally. As much as I, you know, smash down this exterior crust, you're going to still get some nice lift to it because there's so much action in this dough.
Okay. First thing first, it goes into his mise en place.
Sliced
mozzarella.
This is a grande whole milk slice that we're throwing down here.
We love the folks from Fond du Lac. They're going to be one of our sponsors at Pizza City Fest coming up at the end of August. These look like about a 1 ounce slice or so.
Absolutely, and you'll notice I'm going way closer to the edge than I ever would with a New York.
Now, after the sliced mozzarella, the next thing is going to be...
Soubise is taking a little French technique into the Italian-American kitchen. It is a onion-forward bechamel sauce, so we're steaming and then blending in onions into a classic bechamel.
And he's got a little squeeze bottle. He's just going around the perimeter and then kind of zigzagging across the middle. Done. Now some potatoes that he had sliced earlier and then lightly fried in the deep fryer for just a little bit, right?
Yeah, they're, you know, not potatoes that you'd want to eat yet or anything, but we pull some of that starch out of them so that we've got a crispy finished product.
And these are fairly large ovals, maybe 2 inches wide by 3 inches long. Some are crispier, some are a little bit underdone, but those are all going to get baked. The place I had a potato bake in there in New Haven, I think it was called Bar, which is over by Louis's Lunch, the hamburger joint. But yeah, that's a nice combination, potato and cheese for sure. They do it at Bonchi. That's a very Roman. They do sliced potato sometimes, and rosemary I've seen at Metro Pizza here in Chicago. Okay, now on to the lemons, which you sliced very thin on your professional slicer. This is the everything, the whole part of the lemon, right?
Absolutely. Seeds and all, when you go this thin and then bake them at a high heat, you don't even taste or detect the seeds on your palate when you go to take a slice. So yeah, this is utilizing the whole lemon here.
And then the last thing is going to probably be the pancetta, which he sliced over here already. Boy, there's a nice ring of lard around this.
Absolutely. This is a full fat affair. This gets finished with a fried rosemary, parm, oregano, extra virgin olive oil.
Wow. Okay. Okay, so he's transferred it now to his metal peel,
yeah,
and you're going to...
This is a GI metal peel, which is definitely not something you'd see in New Haven. You'd see more of a wooden peel that would have a handle that would span the length of the room, but this is the newest in technology. It's perforated, so I can get all that excess flour, semolina, off of the pizza and provide for a really nice mouthfeel on the bottom of the pizza when it's done.
Little olive oil and then a little bit of fresh garlic he's got, and he's gonna... tool, like a little Ben Reiner.
Something I learned from our dear friend Brian Erst, right, who's part of the Chicago pizza lore here, and I think he got it from Chris Bianco.
Oh, okay. A little shake of oregano?
Oregano, yep. And we will do the parm. I like pre-baked parm and post-baked parm.
Oh, okay. And you're going to launch us into your Pizza Master set at 600.
Absolutely.
And tell us about the top and the bottom settings.
4 on the top and 6 at the bottom.
Okay, so a little bit more intensity on the bottom deck. A little less on the top. And how long will this bake?
I've been experimenting with higher temps on this. So this has been maybe a 7 or so minute bake at 520, but this will be the first time at 600, and we'll watch it and see.
Okay, we'll be right back. Okay, pizza's out of the oven. It's, as they would say at Modern, it's charred. It's not burnt, but there's definitely a darkening on half of the pie on the outside. It looks great though. Wow. You're going to cut it first? What are you going to do?
Always cut it first. I mean, with how we finish this pie, it really wouldn't matter so much, but I really learned under Tony Gemignani, you cut and then you create your masterpiece. You don't cut through your masterpiece.
Ah, okay. All right. So here goes the cutter with the big mezzaluna.
The other thing you'll notice with this cut is a lot of slices, a lot of thin slices. That seems to be the New Haven way.
New Haven is known for kind of the oblong and thin and, right? Sometimes they don't cut it with scissors ever, do they? No,
it's funny that you say that. That's more of a Neapolitan thing. But if you think of where did New Haven come from as a style, came from Neapolitan immigrants coming to that area of the country, settling there, realizing, you know what, wood's expensive. And we got to feed these guys. So let's make bigger pizzas. Let's make them in a bakery-style coal-fired oven. We can afford that fuel. Or we can afford a natural gas oven. Or I think some of these ovens are like using kerosene torches, right? So they were using whatever they had and making a pizza reminiscent to Pizza Napolitana, but really its own thing entirely.
Yeah, but they didn't call it pizza. They called it beets.
Beets.
All right, fried rosemary?
Yes.
You get the high hand placement, so the high hands and then kind of dropping it like the waterfall.
Absolutely.
Even placement. And now a little bit more parm.
Yeah.
Parmigiano.
Parmigiano-Reggiano.
Okay, and then a little bit of olive oil.
Yeah.
This is beautiful, Tony.
Thank you.
And then what?
Some dry Calabrian oregano.
Okay. And that is it. You got about 16 slices there, right?
Yes, sir. Like I said, cut in the New Haven fashion. A bunch of slices. This is a party pie.
All right, we're going to take a bite. We'll be back in a sec. We are back after just discussing this pie, which was incredible. So delicious. First of all, the bright acidity that popped from the lemon that came through, the richness from the pancetta. That's brilliant. I don't know why. Why don't more people do that, Tony?
Like I said, before I ever really worked in a pizzeria, I worked in restaurants, right? I worked in the Table Donkey in Six of the World, where they were fermenting their own salami, we were making our own sourdough, we were curing meats and fishes and creating fully seasoned dishes. And I look at pizza as an opportunity to compose a fully seasoned dish. You want the fat, you want the salt, you want the acidity, and I try and create that with each one of my pizzas. So I'll add a dab of Calabrian chili and you'll have the full experience.
Okay, a little dab would be nice, but I like the pancetta and the potatoes got really crispy in a delicious way. I love that contrast. There's a chew to this crust. He thought for a second it might have been baked a little bit too long because it was a little bit too charred, but no, it came out just right. The undercarriage, lots of mottling, lots of blackening, lots of spots on the bottom, and yet not too thin. It's thin, but it's got some chew to it. So this is really a unique pie. I'm glad I got a chance to try this for the first time because this is really the experimental stage. Last question we ask all of our guests, knowing what you know now about pizza making, which is certainly quite a bit after having gone through like 5 or 6 locations and different iterations, what would you have told your younger self, let's go back 6, 7 years, about being successful in pizza making? What advice would you give your younger self to be successful today?
Honestly, I think I just really would have just started sooner. You know, I think too often, especially artists, we can be so fixated on perfection that we lose the reality of the fact that progress is the journey, right? People are going to follow your journey as soon as you allow them the opportunity to. So if you're building a presence online, if you are building a catalog of recipes and you're thinking about posting stuff, but you're thinking, you know what, this isn't good enough to post yet, you really scratch that thought from your mind, because people really do want to see the journey. And if I started just by posting polished photos, I don't think people would give me the kind of support that they give me today. You know, they see that my pizzas weren't always this good. You've had pizzas of mine that weren't this good. And now you have better pizzas and you've been here for the journey. And, you know, I am where I am because of so many people like yourself that have followed me throughout my journey. And the only thing I would have done different is started sooner.
Yeah, it's so great to see the progress, man. It really got to be rewarding for you as well. Okay, when you're in Chicago, folks, it's Professor Pizza. Just look him up on Instagram, Professor Pizza. Tony will tell you where he is, what he's doing. But at least now through this season, through October, he'll be on this rooftop, Teto, in the West Loop. What's the address here, 400?
406 North Sangamon. 406 North Sangamon.
In the building where the Alinea Group has their offices, right?
Yeah, this is the Morgan Manufacturing Building. So there's private events that go on here. You've got Teto, which is another concept by Atomic Hospitality. So there's a lot of cool things happening in and around this building for sure.
This is very cool. Tony, thank you so much, and congrats on all your success here.
Thank you, brother. Thank you for having me.
All right, coming up in 2 weeks, we're down in Nashville talking artisan pizza. Hold the hot chicken.
I think the pizza scene's growing. We had another pizza place open today down the street here. So I feel like, you know, people are coming in, but it's all transplants from out of town.
I'll talk to Devin Bogdan, the chef and pizza maker at Smith and Lentz Brewing in East Nashville. That's in 2 weeks on August 4th. Remember to subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. Tell a friend and rate us, please. Also, reminder to support the show, if you can, at anchor.fm/pizzacity. That's anchor.fm/pizzacity. Show us your love. We're at Pizza City USA on Instagram, and our website is pizzacityusa.com. Bureaucratic wrote and performed our theme song, and here is wishing you an optimal bite ratio, always.